There's a cute joke that I heard when I was young, and it goes something like this. There was a philosopher, an old philosopher, not a Jewish philosopher, just I'm a philosopher, and he was surrounded by all of his disciples in a crowded room, and he was on his deathbed. And at the last few minutes before his death, so one of his Talmidim, one of his close Talmidim, says to him, and everyone was like listening carefully in the room as to what he was going to say. He said, "Tell us one last chachma, one last, you know, you shared so much chachma with us your whole life, one last pearl of wisdom that we could take with us." So he said, "Okay, so I'll give you one last piskum, one last quote, one last saying." He says, "Life is like a river." And as soon as they heard that, all the disciples were like, "Ooh, that's something very deep. It's very, very deep what he's trying to tell us." And it, you know, makes ripple effects throughout the whole crowded room. And what did he say? "Life is like a river." And it goes all the way, and they're like trying to think of what that could possibly mean. And it goes all the way back to the last guy in the room in the corner. And this guy was a little bit not such a big chassid, and he was a little bit of a skeptic. And he says, "Come on, what does that mean, life is like a river? What does that really mean? We have to just accept it blindly? What does it mean, life is like a river?" So people on the way back up, Taka, were also affected by this. "Yeah, what does it mean, life is like a river? Life is like a river." So it goes all the way up and, you know, finally makes it to the last Talmud right by the bedside. He says, "Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, what does this mean, life is like a river? Please explain it to us." So he says, "No, so it's not like a river." The truth is that life is very much like a river. He was right. There's a great vart that was said by the son-in-law of the Nesiv HaShalom. He says the following beautiful vart. All of you that were in Eretz Yisrael, or you don't have to have learned there, but if you have visited there, or even if you just study the land a little bit from afar, we know that there's two major bodies of water within Eretz Yisrael. There's the Kinneret, the Galilee, the beautiful river, a beautiful lake with teeming with life and with fish and with people boating and fishing and surfing and doing all types of things on the Kinneret. And then the Jordan River continues down beyond the Kinneret and it feeds into the Yam HaMelech. Yam HaMelech is the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is the polar opposite of the Kinneret. Whatever I described to you about the beautiful Kinneret with all of the life in it, all of the fauna and all of the organisms that are in the Dead Sea and in the Kinneret with all the fish that are indigenous to that part of the world, special fish, St. Peter's fish, and all the special fish that you eat there in the Kinneret. The Dead Sea, which is really the same body of water, it's really fed by the same river. The Yarden goes into the Kinneret, and then it goes out of the Kinneret, and it goes down to the Dead Sea. You'd think that the Dead Sea would just be like another Kinneret. But it's the opposite. There's no life whatsoever. It's pure death. Kishmei Kenu, it's the Dead Sea. It's death. There's no bacteria in there. Nothing can grow. It's just salt water. If you have any cuts on your body and you go into the Dead Sea, it kills. There's just, it's impossible to, you know, to really, to swim there, and you get the stuff in your eye and it ruins the whole day. It's the opposite of the Kinneret, but yet it's the same, it's from the same tributary, it's from the same Yarden, it's the same river. So why is it that there's such a stira, there's such a tarta de sasri between these two bodies of water within Eretz Yisrael? So the Nesiv HaShalom's son-in-law says a beautiful vart. And it's such a true vart. And it's something that I want to share with you this evening, and I want to bring home a point to all of you on, you know, this orientation. As you're starting yeshiva, as you're starting to roll up your sleeves and get busy with Zman and learn and daven and do your college and be a part of this new society, this exciting time in your life. He says that there's one difference between the Kinneret and the Amamelech. And the difference is that the Kinneret is a recipient. It takes in water from the Jordan. It takes in water from the Yarden. And then it also gives forth its water back to the Yarden, which continues to flow. In other words, it takes and then it gives. The Amamelech, if you look at a map, is like it's like a cul-de-sac. It's like a dead end. It just takes. And there's no letting go. It doesn't really let the water go anywhere. It just receives, and it receives, and it receives. And it doesn't give off. It's a makabel without being a nisin. And he says that when in life a person is able to be a makabel and a nisin, that's life. We're all makablam. We've been makablam from day one. We've been makablam from our parents. They took care of our needs when we were a baby, when we couldn't take care of ourselves. And they fed us, and they cleansed us, and they clothed us, and they sent us to school and to camp. And then we were recipients of hatava from our rabbeim, from our friends, from our all the people in our community. It's fine. It's good to be a makabel. There's nothing wrong with that. That's very human. But if you're just a makabel, that's not good. If you're a makabel and you're also a nisein, you give forth, you give to others, just like you received, you're able to give. You know the art of giving as well as receiving. That's life. That means that you're a well-balanced person that's able to take, to able to give. It's normal, it's healthy, it's good, it's life. That's the Kinneret. Takes and it gives. Yam HaMelech is the opposite. Yam HaMelech is just a recipient. It just takes and it takes and it takes. It does not give. And when something in life is a taker and not a giver, that's not life. That's death. So life is like a river. Life is very much like a river. It's like the river in Eretz Yisrael. It's like the Yarden. If you're able to give in life, that's the secret to life. If you're just a taker and you just want to take, take, take and not give, you've never tasted life. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz has a similar vart. He says that the Rabbeinu Shalom says to Adam, Leitayv heyaisa adam levade. It's not good that man should be alone. Levade. Esalai ezek. Now I'm going to make him a wife. He shouldn't be alone. Nebuch Adam Arishan is so lonely. So Reb Chaim Shalom says, was he really lonely? I thought there was Medrashim that said that there were malachim in Gan Eden that were tzayin lai basar. They were making him barbecues all day and they were pouring him fancy wines. They were taking care of his every need. Adam Arishan was just sitting learning Torah all day, and the Malachim were completely doing everything for him. How is he levade? How is he alone? He wasn't alone. There were many, there were hosts of angels surrounding him. What was he missing? What was Chava bringing to the equation? He already had so many Malachim around him. Zakhtar Reb Chaim Volozhiner, that the Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, that Adma Rishain, all he could do with the malachim was take. He had nothing to offer a malach. What does a malach need from Adam? A malach has everything that he possibly could use internally. He has everything. He doesn't need, he doesn't eat, he doesn't sleep. Adam can't like share anything with or do anything for a malach. So all he was doing was taking. A relationship of just taking without giving, that's levada. You're alone. You have nothing. It's not a life. Adam Arishan needed an Ezer Kenegda. He needed somebody that he could share life with. He needed Chava. And when he's able to have a Chava that needs him, and he needs her, and they help each other, and they have a symbiotic relationship, that we share things, and we fill in what the other one does not have, that's the beauty of life. That's life. Revolvi is to say that the Lashon of Chaim, life does not have in Hebrew a singular. Chai doesn't mean life. If you look up in a dictionary, the word life, Chaim means somebody that's alive, but the word life itself, there's only a plural word for Chaim. He says, why is it Chaim? Why isn't it Chai? So he says that life alone is not a life. A person just living alone, just as a taker, not a life. I was just in Florida with my son on vacation. So he's going to Israel, so we went on like a last, one last hurrah before he has to hit the books. So we got close to a very nice concierge in the hotel. And we were schmoozing them for a long time, and he was like, so I asked him, like, are you married? And he said, he's like a very cool guy. He's like, he's just very put together. He says, yeah. He says, I'm married to my money. I'm married to my fun. I'm married to my dog. I'm married to my independence. And that was his understanding of life. He's married to himself, basically. But that's not a life. That's taking. That's not chayim. That's chai. That's you're living for yourself. And it seems really geschmack, and it probably is, actually. But in a technical sense, as a yid views life, life is something that you need to share with somebody else. You need to have a wife. You need to have children. You need to have a community. You need to have a chavrusa. You need to have sharing in your life. Because if you're just alone, and you're just taking for yourself, you're just hoarding your money, hoarding your room and board, hoarding your time, and everything is just for you, then that's not how the Torah defines you're alone. It's basically the Am HaMelech. It feels like you're alive and you're living it up, but it's really death because you're not sharing, you're not giving. I saw in a sefer called Iraisa that there's a halacha that a katan can only be mekabel truma. If let's say there's a kayin that's a katan, when can he start eating truma? So the halacha is an interesting halacha. I don't know how many people are aware of this. A katan who's a kayin can only start eating truma when he is able to do birchas kayhanim. From the age that he's able to duchen, that's when he's able to start eating truma. Before he could duchen, he can't eat truma. What difference does it make? Why can't I feed a truma? Why can't I feed a baby in a crib truma? So what some people want to suggest, and I think it fits very well into what we're saying here, is that you can only take truma if you're able to give a bracha. If you're just taking truma, then that's not what you're expected to do. A kohen has responsibility to be mevarech es am Yisrael ba'ava. If you're able to bench klal Yisrael to give brachas, now you could take. If you're just taking, that's not what we want from you. That's not what a kohen is supposed to represent. A kohen is supposed to represent life. And if a kohen is able to share, to give brachas, then he could take. Just taking alone, that's a terrible thing. There's a story that's told about a Yid in Antwerp in Belgium, and it was after the war, and after the war everyone was destitute. A lot of people, they lost everything. They lost their families, and they lost all their money, whatever they were doing before the war, everything was gone. And after the war, it's an amazing thing how much Klal Yisrael was able to rebuild themselves and start communities, start yeshiva, start businesses, and be matzliach to the degree that we were and we are. But not everybody had such an easy time. And there was a Yid that was wealthy before the war, and he was a big Baal Tzedakah, and then he lost everything in the Holocaust. And he was living, his family was still intact somehow, and but they were starving. They literally, you know, had no food to eat. And but he was very proud. He didn't want to go and ask the Rav for help. He didn't want to go to collect money from tzedakah because, you know, he was at one time a very chashuv gevir, and now he has to go and ask. It didn't suit him. But his wife said, listen, what, we're going to starve to death. We have no food in the cupboard. Go to the Rav and get some help. So he didn't have a choice, so he went to the Rav. And he said to the Rav his story. You know, he used to be very wealthy, and he lost all the money during the war, and now he has nothing. And he's so embarrassed, but he has to ask for help. His wife and his children need clothing for Yontif, and they need food on the table, and things are hard. So the Rav was very smart. The Rav had a choice. The Rav could have just said, you know, okay, here's a handout, and, you know, L'chaim L'shalom, good luck to you. He didn't say that. The Rav said like this. The Rav says, listen, he says, I have two ledgers on my desk, two books that I have all my accounting in, with cheshbonos of the tzibur. He says, I have one book that's a book of the nisnim in town, a book that has all the people that I could go to when things are hard, if I need money for a certain cause, for a certain tragedy, for a certain building, whatever I need. I have a book of the nisnim in town that I could go to for help. And then I have another book of makablim. I have a book that I have a list of people that need tzedakah, that are nebuch, they have to take. And, you know, they're the people that they're the recipients of tzedakah. He says, which book do you want me to put you into? Do you want me to put you into the nisnim or into the makablim? So the person said right away, the nisnim. He says, I'm a nisin, I'm a giver. I'm not a makabel. This is like an anomaly for me. This is an aberration. The fact that I came to you for money is not me. I'm a giver. I'm normally a very successful person. What you're seeing is a shadow of who I am. But I'm going to be the biggest giver in the world. I just need a little bit more time to get myself on back on my feet. So the Rav says, that's what I thought, and he puts his name and his phone number and his address in the ledger of the book of givers, and then he gave him a check for whatever he needed, and the person walked out of that office of the Rav, the study of the Rav, with such confidence. He never had that confidence since the war, since everything was stripped from him. He felt like 2 cents. He felt like destitute, and he had to nebuch come to the Rav and ask for money. But the Rav made him feel so good that and reminded him that he was really a nisein, he's really a giver, that he went in that point. He saw himself in the mirror totally different. He reminded himself that he was really a nisin. And he started trading diamonds, which is, you know, the main industry of Belgium. He became the wealthiest person in Belgium. Jew, non-Jew, he became the biggest gevir in Belgium. All because this Rav had the brilliance of saying, remember that you're a nisin. That's what you are in life. If you just look at yourself as being a taker and not give and not be generous and not be able to share your goodness and your chachma with others, then that's death. Had the Rav not done that, he probably would have wallowed in despair, and who knows what would have been his end. But the fact that he was reminded that he was a nisein, that reminded him that he was alive, and that if he's alive, he's going to be matzliach, and he's going to do whatever he can to help other people, and he did. He became a tremendous, tremendous baal tzedakah again. He got back on his feet. He made, you know, millions, maybe billions of dollars in diamonds, and all because he was now perceived as being a nisin. This is something that the Rabbi Nishlam is himself. The Rabbi Nishlam is the ultimate nisin. I was thinking this morning, you know, in davening, before you even start Baruch Shamar, we make a lot of brachas in the morning. And think about so many brachas that are telling us HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Nisein. We say Nisein HaTaira. Birchas HaTaira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Taira. Asher Nosan Lasech V'Vina L'Havchem B'Nia. He gave the rooster the brains to know the difference between day and night. We say HaNisein LaYayev Kayach. He gives the tired strength to be able to do what he has to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Nisein. And we're always supposed to follow the Rabbeinu Shlom. Just like he's a Nisein, we're supposed to be nice to him. You know, Klal Yisrael is a very unusual nation. It's really an amazing nation. And, you know, we say so quickly, Mikam Klal Yisrael, everything that happened. But you have to really understand what Klal Yisrael is. You know, so many organizations and, you know, if you'd stop and, you know, just think about what the organizations that Klal Yisrael do, and I think we take them for granted because we think that it's a given. No other nation in the world has the organizational structures, the networks that we have. Think about it. Hatzalah. Do you think there's any, I don't see any other, the only other ambulances that you see driving around are either Fidney's, you know, if you're not from New York, that stands for, you know, Fire Department of New York, or private ambulance services. There's businesses that, or hospitals have their own ambulances, they make money on that. Hatzalah, I don't see Hatzalah for, you know, for Asians, or for Africans, or for Arabs, or for, I don't see any Hatzalah for them. Klal Yisrael came together, they saw that people were, you know, having heart attacks, Rahman al-Islam, or drowning, or having other tragedies, and they were not being, they were not coming fast enough to help. So they say, no, we're going to do this on our own. It costs a tremendous amount of money to buy, forget about an ambulance, forget about just one walkie-talkie. How much do you think like a walkie-talkie about Salah is? One of those, probably thousands of dollars, right? It's a tremendous amount of money. These aren't the walkie-talkies you get in Amazing Savings. These are real walkie-talkies. And then there's a dispatcher, and then there's ambulances, and then there's, it's crazy the amount of money that's invested in Hatzalah, and Hatzalah all over the world. In England now they have Hatzalah, and in Eretz Yisrael, of course, they have a big Hatzalah, and in New York, in L.A., in Chicago, in Florida, wherever you are, there's Hatzalah. It's not normal that we have that organization to help us. We take it for granted. You know, on Yantif, on Chalamayid, one of my daughters were cutting an avocado, and all of a sudden she sliced her finger. Baruch Hashem wasn't so bad, but it looked really bad, and it was really scary. And we called Hatzalah. Within 2 minutes, there was like 20 guys in the kitchen, you know, bandaging her finger, whatever. It's just like in a minute. No other nation has that. And the Mesiras Nefesh of Hatzalah is unbelievable. Like these guys are, you know, they're not just sitting around doing nothing. Many of them are at work. They're professionals. They're in business. They have stores. Or it's Shabbos, or it's Yontif, and they leave their Seder at night in the middle of the Pesach Seder. They abandon their family, their wives, their children, their parents to run off to some stranger to help them. It's not normal. Think about that. Because Klal Yisrael, to the core, are a nation of Nisnim. They're givers. I want to give to you. I don't care if you're a stranger. I don't care if you're my brother. I don't know who you are. I'm going to go in the middle of the night. It could be in the middle of the summer when you're trying to relax for a few minutes, or it could be in the middle of the winter when it's slippery and icy out. I'm going to go and I'm going to help you. I'm going to give to you whatever I can just because you're my brother. Amazing. If you think about it, it's really amazing. You know, I like Chaverim. Chaverim, the old Talmidim know my stories already about Chaverim. Early in yeshiva, there was a guy who he came to me in the Beis Medrash, and he says, Rebbe, I have a big problem. I don't know what to do. I said, what's the problem? I thought it was going to be, you know, a girlfriend issue, a family issue, you know, the normal garden variety things that Mashkichim deal with. He says, I had my whole bunch of keys, and I got out of my car, and they all fell into the sewer grate right by the car. Like, that's my biggest nightmare. That, like, you know, I said, oi, what are we going to do? He said, I don't know. That's what I came to you for. So I said, you know what? There's a new organization. It just started. It's called Chaveirim. It's like Hatzalah for cars. You basically, you know, if you have a flat tire, if your engine doesn't start, you call Chaveirim. And you know, I said, this isn't one of those issues, but it's sort of car related. It fell out, you know, when you were getting out of the car and it's in a subway grate and, you know, a sewer. And I call them. Anyway, so a few minutes later, some Hasidisha guys come over. I don't know where they came. They're in Queens. I don't. But probably Malachim that just, you know, flew. And we were standing outside on 150th Street and asking, you know, telling the whole story. I thought he was going to, like, roll his eyes and say, this is what you called me for? He runs to his car. He opens up, like, a fishing box, if you know what that is. You know, if you're fishing and you open up, like, a tackle, you know, where you keep all your tackle and your line. Anyway, he had like a fishing tackle, like long, like a long thick thread, and he had a magnet, a big strong magnet at the end of this. He runs back, he lowers this magnet down into the subway, into the sewer grate, and he just, like, as if it's like normal, he just like reels it up and hands my Talmud his keys. We're like, wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. That's a nisin. He stopped whatever he was doing just to be able to help somebody. And that's a very big help. That's a very big help. Otherwise, you have to go and have all new keys made up. And, you know, if you can. And it's crazy what the amount of Akmas Nefesh that this Talmud was saved because of Chaveirim. But Chaveirim also, unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then you have Misaskim. You see what Rachman Alitzan, this summer has been a terrible summer. If you're following the news, you know what's going on. There's something's going on with, you know, with water. But the, you know, I think there's been 7 people that drowned over the course of this summer. Yidden that drowned in Eretz Yisrael and in America and, you know, in Virginia and in you know, all over. Crazy stories one after another. The Misaskim goes. And they organize, they have planes and they're flying with you know, trying to find the body, you know, and with boats. And they were actually the ones that found Rabbi Bauman's body. You know, it wasn't the Coast Guard. It was Misaskim. They were on boats and they didn't stop. They kept going until they found the body. This is unbelievable. This is what it means to be alive, to be a Yid that has Chaim, that we live together. We live together. And I don't think there's a better message that I could share with you. You know, as you're entering yeshiva and as you're beginning a newsman, and the message is that you don't have to join Hatzalah to have this. You don't have to join Chaveirim even. You don't have to join Misaskim. You don't have to. All you have to do is have 2 eyes that see the needs of other people. That's what it means to be in yeshiva. You know, you don't really need a yeshiva today, do you? What do we need yeshiva for? You could do everything. You want to get a college degree, you could probably go online and get the same equivalent college degree. You don't even need a yeshiva. You go to Torah anytime. You know, you get shmuzin on Torah anytime. You get Shiurim on Torah anytime. Lander Torah app. Yeah. No, I read an article. Like, people, it wasn't Lander, it was another large yeshiva college, and people are wondering, like, why are they giving all this Torah out for free? Are you crazy? Like, people are paying $40,000 a year to go to Shiurim, but yet they're just, everything is being put up right away, you know, online. So what do you need? What do you need an institution for? I could save so much money. Just go to, you know, just do something online and just listen to all the shiurim that you want. And it's a great question. What's the answer? What do you need a yeshiva for? I mean, you need a rebbe, you know, to talk to, and you need a rebbe to tell you how to learn and how, you know, what's a question, what's not a question. But I think really what a yeshiva is and what a yeshiva provides for us is a society in which we can learn how to give. there's no greater preparation for life than being in yeshiva. I don't mean being matriculated in yeshiva. I mean being in yeshiva and really sharing with others what we have. It could be materially, could be if your friend needs a tie, you know, he doesn't have a tie, he forgot to bring a tie, or he forgot to, you know, he doesn't have an extra shirt and you do. So give it. You don't have to give it to him, but lend it to him. If he, you know, if somebody is in your dorm room and they're not feeling well, you go to, you know, you go to the pizza store, you go to the dining room and you bring them food. He needs a lift, so you go and offer him, you have a car, he doesn't. Say, you know, I know you need to go to the airport, can I drive you there? You need to go shopping, I'll take you there. There's other types of giving that have nothing to do with material possessions. And that's totally giving of yourself to somebody else. You'll see over the course of time, you know, whether you're, even if you're not, let's say, the strongest student, but you have something that other people need. A lot of times there are guys in shir that they're just floundering in shir. They don't get shir. Or they don't get class. They don't, you know, in the college, it's very hard. And you're able to get things fairly easily. So you see a guy struggling, you see him like failing tests or, you know, doing really badly or really being frustrated. So go over to him. It's not easy because, you know, everybody wants their own time and their own, you know, I worked hard myself. Why do I have to? If we get rid of that attitude, then we'll become nice to him. Go over to the person, say, I see that you're struggling and share, maybe we can make a Seder together. How about, you know, 10:30 to 11 o'clock at night, we'll chazer shir. Or how about, you know, taking my notes for English. I know it's, you know, I know you're not the best note taker. There's a big midterm coming up. Take my notes. Or have Masaira take a test. No, I'm joking. But there's always something that you could give. I'll tell you something deeper. Forget about material, forget about school. This is the most important thing. This is something you don't have to be rich for. You don't have to have a car. You don't have to have even a brain in your head. And this is something that's really, really important. A lot of times in yeshiva, there are guys that are not doing well socially. They're not doing well socially. They feel alone. They don't have too many friends. And you do. You're popular. And you see somebody that's not part of the chevra. He didn't go to your yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and he doesn't look the same way you do. He doesn't dress the same way you do. He doesn't have all the same things that you have, that you enjoy. He's a good guy, but he just doesn't, you know, he needs a chevra. So does it cost anything to go over to that person, to put your arm around the shoulder and say, you know, join us for, you know, we're going bowling tonight. You want to come with us? Do you know what that does to a person? We're going out to eat on Main Street. You know, come with us. We're going, you know, to my house for Shabbos. Come to my house for Shabbos. When you do that, you have no idea. You have no idea what you're doing. You're literally being Mechaya Mason. You're literally, there's no greater mitzvah than you could do. When my kids go to camp in the summer, Baruch Hashem, when they go to sleepaway camp, I always tell them the same shmuz, like they already are rolling their eyes when I'm saying it, but I mean it so truly. I said, like, you're going to go to camp, and Baruch Hashem, you're popular, you're going to have a great summer. There's one thing that I'm asking for you, of you. There's going to be a girl in your bunk who is not popular at all. And she's not the girl that everybody wants to sit on her bed and schmooze late at night with. And she's not the girl that, you know, that everybody is, you know, taking walks with on Shabbos afternoon or asking to be on their team in color war or on their team in kickball or machanaim, whatever girls play. And I want you to go over and be makariv that girl and make her feel like $1 million. That's your job this summer. And they do that. They do that. They don't do that because I told them to. They do it because, Baruch Hashem, naturally, they're good girls. But that is the most important thing that you can learn in yeshiva. Otherwise, you don't need it. You could get everything online today. Everything online. Everything is free today. The one thing that you can't get online, the one thing that's not virtual, is being able to learn how to be a nisim. That's something that you can only learn in yeshiva. That's something that, you know, you can't buy that experience. You can't. There's so many opportunities in yeshiva to do so much. I always speak about, you know, there's a hot water urn in this pantry next door, you know, that has, and I said, like, who fills up that water urn? Is it like self-filling? Is there like a switch like in the middle of the night, like when it, that there's a sensor that knows when it's empty and it like fills up all of a sudden with water? No. Somebody, and I don't know who the person is, once in a while you catch a guy like, you know, doing it on the sly, but there's somebody that goes and fills up the water urn so that hundreds of people throughout the day should get hanah from that hot water. They did a selfless act of nesina, and they have life. There are so many opportunities to be agave rishon, agave sheni, agave tzedaka, to be able to help. There's nursing homes to visit in the neighborhood. There's hospitals to visit. There are people that, you know, tutor other people for free or for money, whatever it is. But there are so many things that you could do. But the greatest thing you could do is just be friendly with other people. Just be friendly. Be a good person. If you see somebody that's not from your chevra, go and they're sitting alone. I'll show you. Come with me tomorrow morning. Not tomorrow morning. Monday morning by breakfast. You'll see. There are guys by breakfast that have a whole chevra and they're talking and their shoes and they're laughing. And there are guys that are sitting alone by other tables. Just alone. And it happens during the week and it happens on Shabbos. That should not be happening in our yeshiva. Our yeshiva should be one family. That's the dream of a yeshiva, to be one, to have achdus. It's not always the case in every yeshiva. I remember the yeshiva that I went to in high school. I went to Long Beach. A whole other story why I went to Hebrew Academy of Long Beach for elementary school. And then we lived a block away. I grew up in Long Beach, so a block away from my house was Long Beach, which is like a very, very yeshivish, a greasy yeshiva. It's a branch of Lakewood, and it's like really, really, really from. And Halb is like, you know, Halb is Halb. Halb is like, you know, it's like a cool, you know, modern Orthodox day school. And, you know, my father was very close with the yeshiva, with the Masifta. He wanted me to go. I said, Dad, listen, I love you. I'll go anywhere you want, but I'm not going there. I ain't going there. It's not for me. You know, we used to go there on Shabbos and Daven. It's too greasy. It's too yeshivish. Not for me. Send me anywhere. Send me to public school or send me to Eretz Yisrael. I don't care. Just, you know, put me up for adoption, but do not send me there. And he said, no, that's going to be good for you. You're going to go there. You know, all my friends were going to the cool yeshiva. There was no DRS then, you know. But, you know, all my friends were going to, like, Rabbi Riskin had a yeshiva here in Queens, OTI. It was, like, a very cool, all the cool guys were going there. MTA was a little bit far from Long Beach. But, you know, I was going to the Masifta. And when I came there, I hated it. I hated it. It was such a culture clash for me. And it took me, like, a really long time to be able to, like, completely, you know, become a flip out. I was like a flip out before there were flip outs. And but eventually I ended up loving it. And the learning was great, and even the English, believe it or not, was great. But the greatest part of that yeshiva, and I think it still is part of the culture even till today, was that it was such a great chevra. It was literally a family. Like, you knew your friends. You knew your friend's mother's maiden name. You knew your friend's siblings. Like, it was like, till today, like, if I see a guy from high school, it's like meeting a long-lost brother. 20 years later, 30 years later, you know, it was such a society of brothers. And That's what a yeshiva is supposed to be. It's a place that you care for one another, not just the guys that you're cool with and that you're... That's great. You should definitely continue having those relationships. Nothing wrong with having friends. It's good. But try to... Not for your own sake. We always think about ourselves. You know, if you notice, 99.9% of our life, we're concerned about me. I mean, you're not concerned about me. I mean, we're all concerned for ourselves. But... That's just the way humans are wired. We're all wired very selfishly. You know, is it hot? Is it cold? You know, am I comfortable? Am I not comfortable? Am I, you know, do I have my raincoat? Am I going to get wet when I go outside? Am I full? Am I hungry? We think about ourselves. What's my major? Did I, you know, register in the right time, in the right way? And that's normal. That's normal. But the people that are alive are really the people that they think about themselves also. We're takers. It's fine to be a taker, but we're also givers. And we understand that I could take, but I also have to be able to give back. And that's what a yeshiva is. Yeshiva is a place, and that's what this yeshiva is going to be through you guys. Because it's all from you. The whole yeshiva is you. You can have the best rabbeim, the best rosh yeshiva, the best mashgiach, the best everything. But if the guys are not the guys, then it's not a yeshiva. So it's nothing. It's an empty bill. It's a nursing home. A yeshiva is a place that you're able to care for one another. A cut across party lines, other yeshivas, beyond the clique, beyond the chevra, beyond the coolness, beyond the popularity. Think about other people. How can I help that guy? I see he's having tzaras. What can I do to help him? I don't want him to fall through the cracks. I want to make him whole. I want to be Mechayim Mesim. I want to be a Nisim. You don't have to join Hatzalah and save a stranger on, you know, in Forest Hills. There are many guys in yeshiva that need Hatzalah. And it makes all the difference in the world. When you're able to start breaking out of your own shell and looking beyond what I could do for you, that's when life begins. That's when life begins. And once you've mastered that to a certain degree in yeshiva, now you're going to make like an amazing husband when you get married. Because that's what it's all about. It's Ezer Kenegda. It's you're no longer levada. You have to be able to give and to share and to see what the other person needs and what the other person is lacking. And you could be a great father, you could be a great Rav in a shul, you could be a great Rebbe, you could be a great communal leader. Whatever it is that you want to do will be enhanced because of this experience in yeshiva. If you're just selfishly thinking about yourself and not contributing anything back to yeshiva, you could do that. A lot of people do that, but you're not going to have those skills that you need for life. And that's really what yeshiva is all about. It's a society of givers and sharers and helpers. That's always been my dream for this yeshiva. I've been here like, I think this is my 19th year in yeshiva. It's a long time. And Baruch Hashem, the amount of guys in this room for orientation is, I think, probably 4 times the amount of the total student population when I first came here. I don't think there were more than 20, 25 guys in the yeshiva when I came here. Came here the 3rd year of yeshiva. And Baruch Hashem, it's grown. But I must say that, and we have great, great experiences in this yeshiva, great chevra, and great alumni, and great experiences, great times together. But I feel, and this has always been my Hargasha, and I share it with every student government president, you know, before he starts. This is the one challenge that we have, and it starts from you, because you're really, if we could change the culture more and better, then it could be this. I wanted always for yeshiva to be a place like my high school, or let's say like camps. I don't know if you guys, which camps you went to, but like, you know, my son went to Camp Reim for many years, and he showed me a video of like the last day of camp, and maybe all camps are like this. I don't remember my camps being like this, but you know, guys were like singing their song. You know, there's like this camp song, and I could sing it to you. I don't know if you want me to, but it's like the words are like we are Ray and brothers and whatever. And you have like guys, like, you know, older guys, and they're bawling like babies because it's the last day of camp. And they're all like hugging and going like this and back and forth. And they're like, they, you know, on the buses, they don't, you know, it's like you think like this happens in girls' camps. This doesn't happen in guys' camps. But it does. Because they created for themselves like a real family. And that's what I always felt. This yeshiva has so many milas, but it doesn't have this mila. Or if it has this mila, it's not enough. Because, and I could give you the anthropological reasons behind it, you know, because there's different majors and different yeshivas feeding into it and different guys from different places. We can come up with all the Torah that we want to explain why it's not that way. But it doesn't have to be that way. And I think if we could like sort of like start from the grassroots, from like now, from the orientation, from the genesis of a new year and a new group of guys, and you guys are like amazing. I see on all your faces, you're like malachim. If we could start now and like really create that culture in yeshiva and care about one another and give to one another and give our time and give our attention and give our love and give our ourselves towards one another more and create bonds, then it could really be the greatest yeshiva in the world. And it's homework. It's something that we should think about. We have time now. We have a Shabbos. You're going to go to Pesach, I guess, and, you know, talk to each other about it and see how, you know, yourselves together, how you can create such a yeshiva. Whatever, it doesn't matter to me what yeshiva you came from. I don't care if you came from Mivaseret or Shalavim or you didn't go to Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't matter. Like I said the other day in orientation, you're, as far as I'm concerned, you're all perfect. And you're all equal. It's just a matter of creating greatness within ourselves, within the yeshiva, together. There's so much good in this yeshiva. We could be so great. Just we have to share, we have to give, we have to be one. We have to be a family. I just saw a beautiful picture in one of the weekly From magazines. It's Reb David Cohn. Reb David Cohn said that Reb David Cohn is a big Pesach in Brooklyn, and he goes to Camp Monk in the summer, and he said such a beautiful thing. He said that normally by Havdalah, and there's like a picture of him like by Havdalah, like a very dramatic picture, and he says normally by Havdalah B'tzibur you don't say the first, you know, Hinei Kel Yeshuasi. It's you know, in like in a shul, if they say Abdullah, I think they just start from, they just start, you know, with the brachas. They don't say the first psukim. So Reb David says, so why do we say it in camp? He says, because this isn't a public place. This is a family. In camp, we're a family. And here we should be a family. And we have to know each other. We have to get acquainted with one another. And you're a class that's coming in together, and make yourselves known to one another. Introduce yourself to one another. Break out of the shell, out of your cliques, and more importantly, not more importantly, but equally as important, go over to the Rabbeim. You know, I want to get to know each and every one of you. I really do. I this is what I live for. I live for the Talmidim. I live for being able to help and to be able to get nachas and to give and to take. But you have to introduce yourself to me. I don't mean just coming over and say, Shalom Aleichem, my name is Yankel. I want you to come and build a relationship with me. Build a kesher shel kayama. I want to hear about your milas and your chesreinus and about, you know, what plagues you and what you triumph in. It's very important to me, and it should be very important to you. I don't know how to say it more clear. I want to build a relationship with you. I understand sometimes it's not comfortable going over to a Rebbe and, like, I don't bite. I look scary, but I don't bite. I'm really a nice guy. I just want to help. I just want to be here. I want to help you out with all of your challenges and make sure that you're doing as well as you could possibly do, and please take advantage of that. I'm literally here like day and night, right? Am I here? Day and night? I go home to reintroduce myself to my kids so I don't forget their names, but like I'm really here. It's almost pathetic, but I'm here. You know, from Daf Yomi at 7 in the morning, which is starting, by the way, at Monday morning, Mitzvah Hashem. We're starting, we're starting Krisis, I think, tomorrow, the Daf. So if you want to get a jump start, you know, maybe start Krisis tomorrow, and Monday morning we'll do it together. But I'm here first Seder. I'm here, you know, very often in the afternoons. I'm here Shabbos, every meal, every Tefillah. I speak 3 times on Shabbos. And give a Daf Yomi on Shabbos. I literally work 7 days a week. I'm the only guy in yeshiva that doesn't keep Shabbos, because I'm working every Shabbos, Yantif, but I love doing it. I'm not complaining. I love doing it. But I'm here for you. I'm not here to give fancy speeches. I'm here so that I could help you and that I could be a part of your life. Please take advantage of it. Do not be afraid to come over to me. I will give you as much time as you need. But we could be a family together. We could be takers, that's fine. But we also have to be givers. If we're going to take truma, we have to bench. To give Birchas Kehanim, we have to be Mevarech Am Yisrael Ba'avo. We never want to be the Yam HaMelech. We always want to be the Kinneret. We want to be able to be takers and then give. And that's how you grow and that's how you live. In the Mitzvah Hashem, together we will be matzliach, we will shteig, we will celebrate many simchas together and get through all of the vicissitudes of life, but it starts from today. Today is the first day of the rest of our life, and let's learn this lesson well, that life is like a river.